You a photographer?
No, I'm a combat correspondent.
Oh, you seen much combat?
Well, I've seen a little on TV.
You're a real comedian.
Well, they call me the Joker.
Well, I got a joke for you. I'm gonna tear you a new ass. Well, Pilgrim, only after you eat the peanuts out of my sh**.
I love that. Welcome back, Joe Radio. 9 to 11 every Saturday night. 800-636-1067. Joe Radio 1067 at AOL. An instant message. And Joe Radio 1067 on the old MySpace. Join MySpace. Be a friend of Joe Radio. We do enjoy that. Now, I was during the break. Let's welcome him. The producer of Joe Radio, DJ Busby. How are you?
How's it going, man? I'm doing good.
Get up on that microphone. It won't bite.
I just wanted to chime in on a couple things. I live over near Colchester Road.
Right.
Very, very close to Bunnyman Bridge, which I've been to many times and have some stories about, by the way.
Well, we'll get to that. Everybody's got a story. It's going to be a great show. I'm really looking forward to it, and I know you are too, because we're working on it together.
And so far as running into things, around that area, I ran into a bat once.
Right.
Comes swooping down, hits my windshield full force, leaves a huge smudge. And I'm not a kind of guy who normally screams, but I scream.
Let me tell you, and you jog my memory on something, because one night my wife and I were laying in bed watching a movie, and all of a sudden a bat flew across our bedroom. And I mean, I was freaking. And she went under the covers. I'm the guy, right? And my dog, at the time, we only had one dog. We had a Westie. She's going berserk. This thing flew. It dive-bombed us. I chased it out of the bedroom. That was the primary thing. Get it out of the bedroom. Close the door. And then I went down. Here I am, Mr. Brave Urban Hunter. I grabbed the Swiffer. You know the Swiffer thing that's on a handle, long handle? And I went down into my living room. Now, where is the bat going to be now, right? And I looked, and we have these old, if you look at this lighting we have in here, and I know that a lot of listeners are kind of familiar with the lighting we have in this old studio. It's old track lighting with these big cans of with big light bulbs in them. We actually have some of this old track lighting in my townhouse. It's so old, and I haven't ever taken it down because I don't own the place. I looked at one of those cans because they don't have any light bulbs in it, and I said, if I was a bat, I would hide in that thing. And, you know, I tapped it with the Swiffer, and out he came, and I pegged him with the Swiffer, and I feel bad. I killed the guy on my floor. I mean, it was like Psycho. I was like, die.
You come from the school of thought where animal control is for pussies, I guess.
Oh, man, I was freaking out, and then I'm still in shock. I picked him up by his wing because I wanted to check him out. So I was like, wow, I got to check out. I've never seen a bat so up close. They're freaky. Well, they're rodents. They're flying rodents. I flipped him out in the street at the front door. The next morning we wake up. Well, you know, go up and calm down the wife, calm down the dog, calm down myself. Next morning we wake up. My wife says, well, what did you do with the bat? I said, you know, I just threw him out in the street. She goes, why didn't you put him in the trash can? I said, I don't want that thing in the trash. No, outside in the trash. And I said, it didn't occur to me. I just wanted him out of the house. Well, open the door, look out there, the sun's shining bright. There's the bat in the middle of the street. She said, go get that, because if some dog eats it, it'll end up with rabies. Now, you had another story, though, and this is pretty common. I'm going to relate to this, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, over where I live with my roommates, as they say, my parents.
Right.
And
your kids. That's how I call my parents now. They're my kids.
So they're taking a walk down Colchester Road, famous for the Bunny Man, mm-hmm. And they swear they saw a wild turkey in the woods. And I'm not talking about a bum with a bottle.
Right.
I'm talking about a real wild turkey. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, I know, you know, Ben Franklin, probably lived around here, didn't he? Or was it Pennsylvania? In this area, this general area. So turkeys, I mean, he was really keen on them. That's as far as my research goes on the indigenous
That's places. A nugget. I did not know that Ben Franklin was down with turkeys.
Oh, yeah. He wanted the turkey to be the national bird.
Oh, well. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to relate to you on that because it wasn't too long ago, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I was out in Front Royal and you see them everywhere. I mean, they run in flocks, I guess, or a gaggle. Or I don't know what you call them.
A gaggle of turkeys.
Yeah, but you could be walking around on the roads out there. You know, in my case, there was a kind of a neat, it was kind of a path that led down to the Shenandoah to fish. And coming back one day, you know, in the evening, a bunch of them just shot. It was kind of a path that was, you know, in a ditch, like a long ditch. And they just shot down and ran up the other side, making all the noise. So at this point, if you got deer wandering around, foxes, obviously, you're going to end up with wild turkeys.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, man.
You know, here's something. Okay, you can go now. But thanks for chiming in, because I'm going to expound on that a bit, too. Here's what I want to know. If you see a wild turkey in the woods, can you, like, snare it? You know, I wouldn't advocate shooting it because you're not supposed to discharge a firearm outside in Fairfax County. But could you snare it? You know, like with one of those snares in the cartoons and catch it and then like defeather it and eat it. And I always see the geese on golf courses, the big old geese. And I know you golfers out there. I'm not a golfer. I would like to be a golfer one day. I just haven't gotten around to it. I like to go to the driving range. And you see them there, too. You try to hit them with golf balls. That's not a good thing to say, but you do. And I was wondering, you know, I know golfers don't like the geese because they sit up on the greens and they poop all over the greens. And goose poop is pretty nasty. And, you know, as opposed to, like, dog poop. That's not so nasty. I know what you're saying, Joe. You're talking about poop. You're a much more serious talk show host than that. No, I'm getting to a point here. Could you eat those golf course geese? Somebody want to call 800-636-1067. I've always wondered, could I bag one of those geese and feather it and, like, you know, make like a Peking duck with it or something? I'm just wondering. Just wondering. That's nasty. 800-636-1067. Hey, I want some. Nobody's IM'd me. So if you're at your computer, go ahead and IM me, Joe Radio 1067. Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and adjust this so I can see it a little better. Hold on. You just bear with me over. You just wait right there. All right. Now I think I can see the computer better. Somebody go ahead and IM me for kicks, just so I can see if it works. And excuse me for sniffling, but it's still March in the Mid-Atlantic, and we're all still sick. Now, I played that Vietnam clip, Full Metal Jacket clip coming in. A, because I love it. But B, because I just want to put some things out there on the war. I see people calling in with stuff they've seen in the road. That's right. If you're just joining me, we've got a hodgepodge tonight because there's no guest. So my guest is you. We're talking about things you've seen in the road, things you may have run over in the road that were weird, not like, you know, not like roadkill or and I don't need a story about bad accidents and stuff because I've been in accidents, you've been in accidents. There's nothing fascinating or cool about that. But like I was relating, I ran over a shovel once, a workman's shovel, and man, what a noise that made. And I've seen everything from a craftsman toolbox to a chair, you know, an easy chair. So we got that. Sabrina.
Yes.
Calling from the Big 540 Front Royal.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
I actually saw two things.
Okay.
One, a full-size baby crib.
Wow.
Fully assembled, dead center of the road, traffic whizzing by.
And
nobody even caring.
And isn't it strange? It was like the easy chair that I saw. It wasn't broken. It's just there.
Right. I mean, and everybody's driving past it like it's not even there.
Okay.
And I also saw, outside of the plains, there is a cement divider. And there, somebody stuck in a Christmas tree.
Oh, okay.
about a year ago, and it's still there.
No kidding.
It used to have tinsel and stuff on it, but it's so old and falling apart that now it's just a husk of a Christmas tree.
And it's just, so it's just a stick.
Well, no, it's still got the, you know, branches and stuff, but it looks a Christmas tree that's been on fire. It just doesn't look burnt.
Okay.
And they have road crews clean up around there, and nobody has touched this tree. It's just sitting there.
Well, maybe they like it.
Maybe it's a little bit of festivity, you know, as you're driving down 66.
It brings them joy.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call, Sabrina.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Danny.
Hey, how you doing? It's Danny.
Hey, Danny, hold on. I got a note from DJ Busby. He says it's a rafter of turkeys. A group of turkeys called a rafter.
That's correct.
Oh, okay. Well, I see from the phone lines here, are you an expert in turkeys? Or you know a little bit about them?
I've done a lot of turkey hunting. Yes, sir, I have.
Awesome.
I heard you talking about how you catch the turkey barehanded. I don't know much on geese, but us and the fellas, what we do, we set up a little trap. You don't need a firearm or anything. Sometimes on people's property, you know, you don't want to get called.
Right.
That type of thing. You set out a feed trap. You wait for the thing. If you have a snare set out, you can catch the thing by the back legs.
Right.
As soon as he lunges forward, you pull that cord. It'll pull the legs. And what we do, I don't know if it's the best process. We use a 2x4 and hit it. And then you got your turkey. You take it on home. Best eating you'll have. Best eating you ever have.
Wild turkey,
best damn eating. I would think the goose, probably the same thing. I don't know what kind of feed they exactly eat, but we done taken down a lot of things barehanded. That's how we usually hunt. We try not to use too many firearms because, like I said, you on somebody's property, they come out there, you get shot, trespassing. We done been through all that mess a couple times. Done got arrested, ended up in jail for, you know, shooting out there, but... If you're quick about it, the main thing you got to remember is to be quick. Because if that turkey gets a hold of you, we had Haywood one night, got bit.
Haywood.
Haywood Jenkins.
Gotcha.
Sean Ingram's buddy. It works over there at the mechanic lot right off 17 up there in Hartwood.
All right.
If you pull it back too quick, that thing will nip you and put a gash in the side of his leg big enough. I couldn't even tell you how much that boy was hurting after that thing done nicked on him.
Awesome. But, thanks for the call, man.
You're very welcome. It, like I said, be careful messing with them things, but you can pull one in barehanded.
Right on. Well, I'm going to do that. Thanks for the call. I'm going to catch a wild turkey, and I'm going to eat him. I'm going to stuff him with rice and breadcrumbs. Tracy, I'm going to be a little late tonight. Go find me a turkey. Now, those geese, you know, the geese on the golf cart, they're so stupid and they're kind of slow and stupid. Now, you don't want to get bit by a geese either, or a goose, you know. You don't want to get bit by that, because I know from my uncle had a farm with ducks, and I know that ducks will give you a little nip. They're ornery. But, Tracy, I'm going to be a little late. DJ and I, we're going to go catch a turkey. And I like how that guy's talking about, well, you don't want to get shot at and trespassing and stuff like that. And then he goes ahead and names all his friends that are nicking turkeys left and right. But I appreciate the call. These are things we learn together, right?
Right.
Joel.
Hello.
What do you got?
Hey, listen, how about dead deer with their legs off stiff? Standing them up alongside the highway.
Have you done that?
No, but I've tried to. I'm a trucker,
right?
And I'm out here all the time, and I've tried to get guys on the CB to stop and help me do it, but nobody. Everybody laughs and thinks it's funny, but nobody wants to do it.
Yeah, because they could be kind of nasty. You roll them over.
Yeah, it would be.
Now, as a trucker, what's like the oddest thing you've seen or on the road?
I've seen a guy ran over a king size mattress last week. Had to have a wrecker and stuff out there pulling him off.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, what would possess you to drive over a mattress, you know?
I've seen mattresses on the Beltway. It's almost common. It's like there's another mattress. I hope somebody gets that before somebody runs over it.
Yeah, well, they tie them down not too good, and they flop around, you know.
Well, it's not that they don't tie them down well. It's that they use that twine, you know, that twine that they get at the store for free, and that stuff doesn't hold.
No. Listen, road rage, man. Listen, I call it vehicular Tourette syndrome. And, like, it's just me by myself in my truck, and I'm calling everybody every name, blurting out obscenities all the time.
Right.
I catch myself, you know, and I get around. I just say it's like a case of Tourette's, you know. But I know what you mean about that deal with them racing like that. Listen, I see that all the time.
Yeah, I bet.
In the metro areas especially. And to be honest with you, I hear a lot of stuff on the radio between a lot of truckers, too.
Right.
And, you know, right now the common talk is the place of fuel and shutting down the truck.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up. Let me get your opinion on that. That's actually in my notes. I wasn't sure if I was going to get to it. But the trucker strike, you know, I talked about the trucker strike a couple of weeks ago. Is that going to happen then?
I'm still trying to get an answer. You see, that's always been the problem. They just can't get together. You know what I mean? Now,
yeah,
I'm a company driver. I don't own my own rig.
Okay.
But, you know, I sympathize with my boss. And I put it like this. There's guys on the radio talking about we're going to shut them down, we're going to shut them down. And, you know, after a while, you get like, I just tell them, look, if you're going to shut your truck down, stop where you are. Put your flashers on, and I'll be glad to stop right behind you.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
But nobody seems to stop, you know what I mean? And I'm going to be honest with you, man. I think it's pretty relative. Like, you know, all the talk about the economy and everything, I heard another commentator the other day, I think it was Tony Snow. You know, we haven't really lost a lot. We've just lost some of what we gained, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean, we're out here, we're buying the fuel. Everybody's complaining, but they're lining up to buy it.
Well, but this issue with these truckers is mainly independents, and they're really feeling the squeeze, apparently.
Oh, sure. I mean, my boss has 5 trucks.
Oh, okay.
So he's pretty much a small fleet independent owner.
Okay.
And, I mean, I go out of my way to find him cheap fuel because I know in the end, I mean, when I first saw it go over $4 a gallon, I was coming back from Texas, where you'd think fuel would be cheap, but it's actually not.
Funny how it works that way.
And, yeah. And I got into Illinois, and there it was. It was like 4-something a gallon, 4.10 or 4.13 a gallon the first time I saw it a few weeks ago.
All right, well,
and I'll be honest, gloom and doom hit me. I thought, boy, I'm coming home to no job.
Well, let me ask you this, because I remember from when I was talking about it. If the Indies all took, you know, the strike, took the time off, they cover about 13% of the trucking industry. Is that significant enough to make a dent, to make the average American feel it at the Walmart or the Target or at the grocery store?
Well, see, I think they're feeling it already. Will it help? Will they feel it more? Probably a little bit, but to understand the trucking business, you have to understand that there's mighty big companies out here that afford to actually run trucks up and down the road empty. And I'm not saying they do it as a standard practice. I'm just saying they do it. And they buy millions of gallons of fuel.
Right.
And they don't pay $4.10 a gallon. If we're paying $4 a gallon, they're paying $3.20 or $3.30, you know, whatever.
Well,
yeah. They're buying so much of it.
Not only that, but they've got in company, they've got mechanics, they've got garages that are all theirs.
Yeah. And, you know, my real rap after 37 years of doing this is that if you give it up, man, they're just going to get it all. You know?
Yeah.
And, like, I really struggle with it in that respect. I tell the guys, man, if you can afford to hang in there, hang. Because if you don't, it's almost like, you know, Greyhound being, like, federally funded and stuff like that. It's almost like that's what's going to happen in the trucking industry. It's going to come down to a handful of huge companies.
Yeah.
And the government will subsidize it because people are going to get, well, listen, when the price of London broil is $12 a pound,
right?
Then something might happen. I mean, then if you have that's the other thing. I tell these drivers, you get the average American that goes to the store that's starting to feel the pinch.
Right.
Behind you, now you have a voice.
Yeah.
But if you don't get them behind you, you have nothing.
Well, man.
You know what I mean? Really, because that's the only thing that's really going to change it. When people are going to get outraged. I mean, but like I said, I think it's all pretty relative. I think, you know, things will, I have good hope that things will, like, even out and, you know, we'll just go on with it.
Yeah.
And we'll just get used to it. I mean, what are you going to do? You got to eat. You got to live.
Yeah.
Got to work.
Well, I appreciate your call. You give me and the listeners a great insight into that.
Well, out here on the road, they call me the 10-cent millionaire, but that's another story. And you'll hear from me again, Joe American.
Thanks a lot.
I'm passing through D.C., okay?
Right on, man. Thanks for listening.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, that's awesome. God, I love the people who listen to the show, my fellow Joe Americans. Great points made by him, and great to have you call in, Joel, on your insight to the trucking industry, because how much do I know about trucking? You know, I've said it before. I am going to say it again. I like to reiterate this. I am not Rush Limbaugh. I'm not Sean Hannity. I'm not Bill O'Reilly. I'm not even like some of the liberal commentators. I was dialing around this week because I figured if I'm going to be a talk show host, maybe I should listen to some of the other guys just to see what they're up to. And I realized I didn't have to because I'd heard them before. They talk down to their listeners. They talk as if they're experts all the time. I bet if you brought up trucking to O'Reilly or Limbaugh, these guys are multimillionaires. They probably tell you something that's not necessarily false, but not necessarily covering aspects or angles of the subject like our friend Trucker Joel did there. You know, we got an angle, and that's when I first started this show, I knew I would be covering things that are covered all the time by any number of hosts, whether they're TV, whether they're writing, journalists writing about it in newspapers. I wanted a different angle. You know, I wanted the Joe angle. I wanted the angle of an average guy, which is, I am an average schmuck. Oh, you caught me sniffing there. I'm not crying. Hold on. Oh, man, it's allergy season here in the Mid-Atlantic. Boy, if it isn't flu season, it's allergy season, but that's okay. Anyway, getting back to what I was doing, I'm giving you an average guy's look. I wasn't always in radio. I didn't come out of college and go into with a communications degree and go into radio. I didn't even go to college. Kind of wish I had sometimes. But in the time between graduating from Fairfax High School, go Rebels, yeah, And when I got into radio about 11 years now, 11 years ago, I think I got into radio, definitely 10 years ago, I was a courier. I was kind of an auto mechanic, like an apprentice, got a good insight to that business. I've been a contractor off and on since I was 21 years old, painting, drywall, tile. Got a pressure washing business as it is. I love having a business. So, you know, what you're not dealing with a college-educated guy here, and I think that's to all of our advantage, because that way I can't sit here and profess to know everything and expect you to buy it. So there you go. This is a different show for that one reason. And that's what I wanted to do going into this, because I knew I'd be talking about things, the war. 5 years, 4,000 dead. Dick Cheney, in an interview, I think it was the CBS Morning Show. Let's see if we got it right here. There we go. Oh, that's my computer clicking.
Tell me what you said to the Iraqi leadership and how far you're willing to push them.
On the security front, I think there's a general consensus that we've made major progress, that the surge has worked. That's been a major success.
Two-thirds of Americans say it's not worth fighting.
So?
So? You don't care what the American people think?
No.
We have a new game called Xantar. Mm. Xantar is a gelatinous cube that eats warriors in a medieval village. And every time it eats a chieftain, you ascend to a higher level. Beauty part is you can't get to the next level, so the kids keep coughing up quarters, you know.
There you go. I mean, what's the difference between Noah's Arcade and Dick Cheney there? I play that for a reason. I'm not making light of it. This war thing is out of hand. I don't think I'm a cut and runner either. I was talking to a friend of mine last night. He lives in Montana. I think we'll have him on the show too. He's a journalist out in Montana. He can give you a lot of insight to environmental issues down out there, and he's got a lot of information about how the southwest part of the country is running out of water. I don't have enough time to get into that. I don't know anything about that. But this war thing, I don't think I'm a cut and runner. There was some what they called good news out of Iraq this week that the Iraqi forces are actually starting to fight their own fight, their own battle. And anything that gets our soldiers out of harm's way, I'm going to be for. I want to see if I have the, I have some notes here. Let's see what I got. Just bear with me here. Well, I was going to talk about the hidden cost behind the war. Specifically, the Marlboro soldier, the story of the Marlboro soldier. I read this article in Rolling Stone magazine, and I got the information. I'm going to paraphrase the article I've got in front of me. And I just, like, cut and paste a few things that I thought were pertinent to make my point, to find my angle. The man in that photograph, you can actually Google Marlboro Soldier, and it'll come up. His name is James Blake Miller. He's 21 now. And although he is an icon, he would probably rather not be one. That's the gist of the article. He's quieter now, easier to anger. He turns to fight at the sound of a backfire. Can't look at fireworks without thinking of fire raining down on a city. Has trouble sleeping. And when he does, his fingers twitch on invisible triggers. His diagnosis, post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, here in the Washington area, we have a lot of service people. Maybe not as many as down in the Norfolk area. But obviously we got the Pentagon, Fort Belvoir. I mean, there's just everywhere. Those are just two that I can think of right off the top of my hand, top of my head. Now, you know, this is the unknown cost of the war. We can go on and on and on about, I brought it up last week. It's at $500 billion now. Expected to be $3 trillion when all is said and done, if anything ever is all said and done. You know, that's something that remains to be seen as well. When will this war in Iraq be all said and done? John McCain says he'd fight it for 100 years. I got news for John McCain. You may feel that way, but it isn't going to happen. We're running out of money for this thing. You know, you can be for the war, you can be against the war, but the point is, we're running out of money. We can't afford this anymore. Those people have to start taking care of themselves. That is not news. I know you're saying, Joe, you don't have to tell me those people have to start taking care of themselves. That's what I would say. We can't afford this war monetarily, financially. And we can't afford what it's doing to soldiers, like this guy. He was fighting in Fallujah. If you read the article in Rolling Stone, I highly recommend that you do. He'll give you, you know, while the mainstream media wants to glorify what these soldiers are doing in the name of our country is one thing, then it's a good thing, because the glory of war is something that very few people experience in their life. But to hear this fellow, James Blake Miller, describe what went on in Fallujah, I think it was back in 2004, will terrify you. And the thought of putting 20-year-old kids through this kind of thing, I don't know if I were president. Well, I am your president, I'm president of Joe America. I don't think, as president of the United States of Joe America, that I would put kids like that through there. A couple of weeks ago, my buddy Hank called in, asked me what I would do about the war, and I explained to you, my fellow Joe Americans, how I would go about it and kill everybody. You know, a lot of people say, "Well, Joe, that's not really, you know, that's not exactly." Well, you can't do that. Well, I know you can't. Well, war ain't pretty. News bulletin, it's not pretty. And I don't take it lightly. So the unknown cost of the war is we're going to have more people like James Miller. People that aren't quite going to adjust back to society. So if you're a soldier, you're listening, 800-636-1067. And especially if you've been to Iraq and you've come back and you're going back, can you call 800-636-1067 and explain some of this post-traumatic stress disorder? And if you're a psychiatrist in this area who might be treating some of our soldiers, or can give me a better insight as to exactly what it is. Obviously, by the name, it doesn't sound good. This is the unknown cost of this war. And it's a cost we'll be paying for a generation. And it's a very serious thing to think about. But when you hear other people, when you hear other talk show hosts talk about it, they talk about, oh, Democrats want to cut and run. Oh, the Republicans want to go on for 100 years. That's not the issue. That's not the point. The point is what we're doing to ourselves as a society and the people that are going to bear the burden for it. Irvin, my first caller, my first listener.
Joe.
How are you?
Doing fine. How about yourself, man?
Fine. What can I do for you?
Talking about this war ordeal. Well, you know, I was not in the service, but my father was. And I take him to the VA clinic occasionally, where I'm at here in Fredericksburg. Well, in Richmond.
Right.
McGuire. Well, you know, numerous times over the last 4 or 5 years that I've been there, I get a chance to talk to a lot of veterans that's in there and get some views about this war, and it's all the same thing. What's it for? What are we going to benefit from this? You know,
that's what veterans are.
Well, and it's not just that, but look what the administration is giving these veterans. They're cutting everything out.
Yeah,
don't want to help the veterans now, more or less the ones that, like you're talking about, that will be coming back.
Right.
It's going to be just an endless ordeal, and it's, I just don't understand why the government does not look at these things and care about this country more than they care of another country.
Sort
of like charity. It starts at home. Now, how in the world, going to war with a country for a reason, I can understand that, if it's a just reason and it's significant enough to do something drastic. Because it's just like you've said before, what is there past war?
Right.
Nothing. That's the ultimate.
Yeah, it's the ultimate.
Right. And what have we gained from this going to an ultimate, except for certain people in higher places that are benefiting off of the taxpayers of this country?
Well, I'll tell you what, Irvin, I'm going to take the next call because I've got an ex-Marine on the line.
Well, that's great, Joe.
And listen. Let's get some insight on
this.
Yeah,
likewise, and have a good one. And shoot some answers back on some emails sometime.
Right on, buddy.
See ya.
John.
Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Welcome to the show. You're an ex-Marine?
Yeah, former Marine. We say former.
Former? Well, thank you for your service to our country. And boy, I tell you what, you Marines are some tough cats.
Hey, Joe, I agree with pretty much everything you're saying.
Okay.
The last caller was kind of right and kind of wrong. As a Marine, most people really don't care why you're going into a situation.
Right.
I mean, those decisions are made politicians, and they constantly make stupid decisions.
Well, it is as a soldier, it's your job to do what your commander in chief tells you to do.
Yeah.
And we're lucky that is, it's ingrained in armies all over the world. But yeah, I mean, when you sign up, you kind of have that idea. But go ahead.
But you go there because your friends are going there, and I mean, I was a sergeant, and you watch your friends' backs, and go there for other people. But I mean, and the only thing that I wanted to comment, you made a statement that, we're putting our, people that are 20 years old in these situations that it's going to mess with your head when you see, body parts laying on the ground.
Right. I mean, straighten me out.
Well, no, I'm not trying to straighten you out. I'm just saying that, at what point, is anything worth fighting for? Is anybody ever going to be mentally capable to see, a hand or an arm or a foot or something laying about, and then, you know, be okay with it. You're going to, but I don't think, and I do agree with the last caller when he said that when people come back from those situations, I mean, as far as, okay, you're missing a part, we'll pay you for that part.
Right.
But they're not doing anything for, you know, you've seen some pretty messed up things. How about getting some counseling?
Yeah, and that was the point of this article in Rolling Stone with James Miller. They had shipped him to West Virginia to get some help, but he missed being back in Kentucky, so he went back to Kentucky. So there's not really an outreach in these hills of Kentucky where he lives.
Exactly. Well, that's a whole different issue altogether. The fact that inside the Beltway in this area right here, they're going to try to do stuff to make everybody, all the politicians saying, you know, oh wow, we're making concerted effort.
Right. Well, and one of his points was he felt he should have a Purple Heart because he wasn't missing an arm or a leg doesn't mean he wasn't injured in the war. And he was talking psychologically.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, John, thanks for calling in, man. I mean, I try to be even with this war and I try to be patient. I am happy to hear that they're fighting over there for themselves, but it doesn't sound like they're doing so well.
Yeah.
But, thanks for calling in, man. I'm humbled, and I really appreciate it.
No problem. Good show, Joe.
Thanks so much.
Later.
Well, there you go. That's how we work together in the United States of Joe America. Man, I tell you what, I love the Marines. Now, I know there's some tough guys. I know the Navy SEALs are tough, and I know the Army Rangers are tough. But, boy, Marines, when you see the commercials on the television, they just, you know, nothing conjures the image of the soldier like the Marine. But, John, I'm glad that I'm not upsetting people with the things that I'm saying. I'm not here to inflame people. I'm not here to get people angry at me. I'm here to put things out for all of us to comment on. And, man, I appreciate it when you know, we got the trucker calling in, we got soldiers, we got the cops calling in. My fellow Joe Americans, I am humbled and I am honored to serve as your commander-in-chief of the United States of Joe America. All right. Well, where do we go from there? Anyway, I'm glad that people are getting my point about the hidden cost of the war. And what can I do? What can we do as a society to straighten it out? We don't have to worry about it so much right now. I know that sounds glib, and I don't mean to be glib. What my point is that this is something that's going to last for a very long time, obviously a generation. So there you go. I don't know if we've answered. I don't think we've solved anything, but at least I've able to, through my show, to bring it to the front. I think I'm just going to take a break. You know, I'm going to get myself together because I really appreciated that call and. Our soldiers are the best in the world. And so I think that our elected leaders need to let the soldiers do their jobs and kill everybody. That's just my point. That's just my opinion. 800-636-1067. We are covering a lot of things today. When I get back, remind me if I forget. I want to talk a little bit about Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, liberals. I want to touch on how we're at a point in this country's history where if we don't just all out get a third party rolling, the lines between liberals and conservatives and Republicans and Democrats are already blurred so much that I would like our elected politicians 20 miles down the road to start behaving like adults and quit acting like kids. We're going to talk a little bit about Obama and Hillary. And I have this great article called Day in the Life of Joe Middle Class Republican. And it's a comedy piece. I don't want you to go freaking out. I didn't write this. And I it's on the internet, so it's got to be true. Why would anybody go through the trouble of putting something on the internet that's not true? Joe Radio, 800-636-1067. Joe Radio, 1067 at AOL. Joe Radio, 1067 on the AIM. Joe Radio 106.7 on the good old MySpace. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Hang in there with me, everybody.